You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. The passage of Proposition 64 in 2016 came with big promises for California voters. The legalization of recreational cannabis in the largest market in the country also came with reducing or clearing criminal punishments as well as equity investments. However, heavy taxes and regulation coupled with a lack of enforcement to combat illegal grows has led to an explosive black market that is driving out legal businesses. As enforcement agencies work to stamp out one illegal operation, many more pop up. And with the outlaw grows, come environmental degradation, labor exploitation, violence, and death. Joining us is journalist Paige St. John to discuss LA Times' investigative reporting titled Legal Weed, Broken Promises, The Fallout of Legal Pot in California. Good morning, Paige. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Vicky. Thank you for having me.
What sparked you to start digging into this? When did you sense there was a problem?
Well, we've been seeing this since 2016. I began to look at the Wild West up in Northern California with grows. I did a story on Siskiyou County, and at the time, these were illegal outdoor gardens, 99 plants each, and they filled an entire valley of about 1,000 farms. And we thought that would be the end of it, that legalization, you know, was promised to eventually put that out of business, that there wouldn't be a market for it. 2018 came and went, and after I was doing the coverage on and getting clear of the coverage from the January Capitol insurrection, I decided that it was time to get back in, and that this wasn't a problem going away. It was actually continuing to get worse and killing even the market for legal sellers of cannabis.
When you were actually able to see this clearly through your investigation, did it meet mm-hmm. your inkling or your expectation?
Oh, far beyond. I mean, I was aware of a couple of grow centers that had emerged in California that had overtaken entire communities, you know, three or four. But when I started taking to satellite and mapping every county that I looked at had these large greenhouses. And we're talking commercial scale. We're talking 9, 10, up to 100 greenhouses of cannabis, multi-million dollar operations out in the open and seemingly unafraid of law enforcement. They get raided, they go back into business within days or weeks.
Wow. And you had no hard data. How were you able to come up with the numbers that really gave an unprecedented perspective of the scale and how it compares to the number of legal operations?
Right. I was amazed at the lack of data on how large the illicit market is in California. It would seem to be of something of critical importance, but nobody actually had an idea. Even the market analysts in the cannabis industry had no idea how large this was. We did a sample of like 3,000 square miles in that area in six counties, mapped enough cannabis to provide, you know, all of the legal sales in California just in that little sliver. We don't know how much there is statewide, but it gave us an idea of how ubiquitous it is and how big of a problem the state faces.
Right. And the counties you looked at were Siskiyou, Trinity, Mendocino, which can be called the Emerald Triangle, to Shasta, Butte, and even San Bernardino County in Southern California. You also, when we look at Prop 64, I mean, there were also promises that were attached to that proposition. I mean, equity investments, reduction or decriminalization of cannabis-related criminal records. But you also learned that there were unintended consequences in a reduction of penalties that came with this proposition that led to a thriving black market.
Yes, and I want to tip my hat to some of the other reporters on our team, because earlier in the year, we wrote about how the social equity promises weren't being kept and the capital investment promises weren't being kept. What happened with criminal enforcement was the push to decriminalize and destigmatize cannabis didn't just affect drug possession laws, which had really wreaked havoc in the brown and the black communities, but also cultivation. And so whether you're growing 10 plants for commercial production or 10,000, it's the same $500 misdemeanor.
Well,
and law
nothing.
Enforcement tells, Exactly. It is nothing. Law enforcement says that they can't even get local district attorneys to file those charges. So they'll raid a property with $10 million worth of cannabis on it, and there are no serious criminal penalties there, no felonies to take to court. It still is a felony if you find an environmental crime or if you build a case like money laundering or find other charges. But that takes investigators, and nobody has the manpower or the funding at this point to really tackle cannabis and who's behind this. So, you know, we're talking a multi-billion dollar industry. These aren't small mom and pop grows that I'm looking at. This is major organized crime.
Wow. Looking at some of the numbers that you found through satellite imagery, parts of Trinity and Mendocino counties, illegal grows outnumbered licensed farmed by as much as 10 to 1. You also mapped more than 1,000 farms in an area last year, Juniper Flat. The greenhouses covered 10 million square feet. That's a 4,200% increase since 2018. That's just 4 years. What kind of work goes into verifying legal from illegal grow operations?
It, for me, was a matter of getting from the Department of Cannabis Control maps of the parcels of all licensed cannabis cultivation in the state. And then I also pulled hemp registrations in case some of this agriculture is hemp. And I steered away from areas that are, you know, have other crops. We didn't do Santa Barbara, for instance. No way to tell what's in the greenhouses there. So it was pretty easy to identify legal operations and carve those out. Places like Trinity Pines up in Trinity County were amazing because those people can get a license. So they, you know, they are eligible to county grants cultivation permits, but 9 out of 10 are not doing that. But then you've got other counties that have tried to ban commercial cultivation, like Siskiyou County. Each and every parcel there that is being used for cultivation is an illegal operation.
So if legal operations are allowed in some counties, but in that example you gave, it like outlaw grows are like 9 to 1, why? Yeah. Why not go the legal route?
Well, economic reasons, first of all. Legalization means regulation, it means permitting, and it means taxes and inspections. But there's an even bigger reason that's lurking there, and that is they probably don't care to legalize because that only gives them access to the legal California market, which, even though it was $5.3 billion in taxable sales last year, is a small pittance. The big market is the national market, and that's illegal. Also the global market. So what we heard on the ground talking to growers, both legal and illegal, is that the vast majority of this cannabis is headed out of California. You know, we are the food basket of the nation. We are the cannabis basket of the nation as well.
Wow. I can't help but think we're in drought. How are these operations getting water?
They are pumping and they are diverting. We found homeowners who live near operations whose domestic wells have gone dry. We found streams continued to be diverted despite efforts by the state, you know, and promises since 2013 to enforce environmental protection laws and the Clean Water Act when it comes to cannabis. And there's a lot of political controversy over cannabis and water. I think there's a lot of tug and pull over whether cannabis should be treated as an agricultural crop, like alfalfa or hay or avocados, or whether the unlawful use of water for illegal cannabis ought to be considered a crime.
I'm just curious, what kind of criminal activities just beyond the illegal cultivation happens at these grow sites?
Well, the illegal cultivation is the least of it. I mean, cannabis itself is a rather harmless plant on the scale of things, and the criminal penalty of growing is extraordinarily minor, too. The real problems come in that this is a cash industry that attracts crime. We have street gangs coming into Northern California by the border at Siskiyou attempting to rob the growers who have to keep their cash, you know, on them. Everything's a cash transaction. And that has led to armed robberies. It's led to murders and kidnappings. There's labor exploitation, workers who are mistreated, whose wages are stolen, and I've found workers who've been dying in the greenhouses themselves. As the growers have switched to increase the intensity of cultivation, they're using PVC hoop houses stretched with plastic and running generators in there and not venting it for carbon monoxide. So everywhere I've looked in pulling coroner reports, I've found these carbon monoxide deaths.
Wow. I also just think that there's probably an enormous amount of, you know, security and protection since this is a cash operation and it's illegal. What were the dangers in pursuing this investigation?
Guns everywhere. So, yes, our photographer, when he was photographing from a distance on a public highway, water trucks filling up to take water to the cannabis grows, was repeatedly confronted by individuals until finally four people came and surrounded him with their vehicles. One threatened to put a bullet in his head. The other took a tire iron and began wailing at his car, breaking out the windows and smashing the doors. And he, of course, hightailed it out of there.
Oh, I'm glad he's okay. That is terrifying. Yeah. Where's the state in all of this? Isn't there a department dedicated to this, including enforcement?
Yes, the Department of Cannabis Control, after the first 4 years of legalization, when everything was spread across multiple agencies, you had Ag doing one part, and Consumer Affairs doing another aspect of it. It's all under one umbrella. The governor's cannabis czar, Nicole Elliott, was appointed to run the show. When I spoke to her about this, she said that first, she had no idea how large the illicit market was, but she had heard complaints from growers because they're complaining that the market prices have collapsed. But second, she said her first priority was to try to get the legal market up and running. She said without integrity in the legal market, it wouldn't matter what was going on with the illicit market. So it's a second priority at this point for the agency.
What is the ratio of legal cannabis in the state to actual consumption? Like, what are people actually buying?
Well, this the expectation when Prop 64 was passed that the cannabis market would grow in California, but Nicole Elliott told me that they believe that legal consumption in the state has remained flat. We actually aren't attracting a whole lot of new consumers to legal cannabis. So it's like 1.5 to 2 million pounds a year. The state, on the other hand, is expected that it's producing maybe 15 million pounds a year. And the state has handed out licenses with the capacity to grow 7 million pounds alone. I know not all of that is in production, but there is a lot of cannabis out there.
Right.
Given
that much more than people are actually buying, how do legal growers feel? Because that obviously affects their bottom line. This is an expensive, highly regulated industry to get into in the first place.
Well, there are two kinds of legal growers. You've got the large hedge fund-backed mega industrial, kind of like industrial ag. You've got the industrial ag version in cannabis. Those growers continue to build capacity. They aren't as disturbed by the low prices because they are not expecting profits yet anyway. They're building capacity on market speculation for a national market. In fact, some of them, I hear, are even leasing their expensive cannabis greenhouses for lettuce just so they don't sit empty. And then you've got the legacy growers. These are the people that come to mind when Californians, I think, were voting on Prop 64, who they thought would be growing their cannabis, the people in the Emerald Triangle, the people who have developed and created these strains and spent years playing cat and mouse with police. Those growers are devastated. Every single one I spoke to felt that, was having difficulty making a living. Some of them are dropping out and giving up. Some are starting to sell out the back door again just to pay the mortgage and not starve. And they feel they've been duped. They feel that this was a false promise to them.
Is this comparatively across the country, because California is not the only one that has recreational marijuana legalized, I mean, how are other states addressing this? Is this kind of par for the course, or are there dramatic differences?
It is an emergency situation in Oregon. There, the growers have taken advantage of hemp laws in order to set up large plantations. And then last year when they went out in the field and tested those, I think like 85% of those hemp farms were actually growing high THC cannabis. Oklahoma has a land rush on cannabis right now. The licenses are pretty easy to get and relatively cheap. And as a result, the state has drawn a lot of large-scale growers who are apparently smuggling it out of the state. So Oklahoma is also wrestling with this beast. I think the only place that I've heard some stories of success is Colorado. And the big difference being Colorado is 10 years into this game. So that raises the question of maybe the market eventually will stabilize in California, but what will those 10 years look like?
Yeah, what will it take? Finally, in the last 30 seconds or so that we have, is there anything that cannabis consumers in California can do? I mean, people that are...
Absolutely.
Okay, what can they do?
Yeah, absolutely. Because everyone I spoke to said, you know, this is like a blood diamond situation. Consumers, you know, there's a huge disconnect between people in urban areas getting cannabis at a dispensary and how it's actually being grown. There are labels. There are people who certify cannabis as organically grown and who also certify the labor conditions on those farms. So mindful consumers, I think, could make a big difference.
Paige St. John is an investigative reporter for the Los Angeles Times. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it's a delight. Thanks.
Paige is discussing their series following the legalization of recreational marijuana in California that contributed to a black cannabis market growing to unprecedented levels in the years since. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.